Hi, everybody. Welcome to English Digest. I'm Tom.
Hi, I'm Stephanie.
And today we're talking about flowers. And it's late February. I'm not really up on blooming times for the various blossoms that come out this time of year. Maybe the cherry blossoms are out right now. I'm not sure. But, of course, during the spring, there are lots of flowers blooming. And one of the most popular flowers in the world that we all know and love is the rose. And that's what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, I live in a pretty hot area of the United States. It's a desert, but one of the things that grows pretty well there are roses, rose bushes. In the front of our house, we have a whole area of just roses that my mom planted originally and my dad tries to take care of, but they're just beautiful. Yes, they have thorns, you know, those little pick your skin or make you bleed. It's kind of painful if you get...hit by a thorn, but man, they're beautiful and they smell terrific.
That's right. And of course, there are different roses for different occasions that come in different colors. My grandmother did not grow roses. She grew tulips, which are those flowers that are famous in Holland because, you know, my grandmother was Dutch, or at least her grandmother was Dutch. But in any case, that means I've got Dutch blood. But in any case, that's another flower. We can talk about tulips some other time. But today we're going to talk. They don't smell as good as roses. That's right. That's why we're talking about roses today. So let's get to it, everybody. Let's read the entire contents of today's lesson one time. Of all the flowers in the world, there is perhaps none more iconic than the rose. Allusions to this flower are scattered throughout modern culture. However, this alluring bloom was just as significant in the past. In fact,The rose has long been used to communicate a number of ideas, ranging from romance to political alliances. In this way, the flower has served as a powerful symbol throughout time. It is believed the rose first became important in Greek mythology. When Aphrodite, the Greek goddess of love, emerged from the ocean, the sea foam that touched her body turned into bushes of white roses once it reached the shore.Creating a symbol closely connected with her beauty. During the period of the Roman Empire, roses began serving another purpose. Roses were painted on the ceilings of banquet rooms as a way to remind guests that anything discussed under the influence of wine should be kept secret. This gave rise to the Latin phrase sub rosa, meaning under the rose, which is used to denote confidentiality.Later, at the end of the Middle Ages, roses were associated with power. In 15th century England, two warring houses, the House of Lancaster and the House of York, were both represented by a single rose, a red one and a white one, respectively. When the House of Lancaster won control of England, Henry Tudor became King Henry VII. After he married Elizabeth of York,He combined both roses to show the relationship between the two houses, creating the Tudor rose. Today, roses are largely used to express feelings for others. For example, red roses popularly symbolize love, yellow roses are connected with friendship, and a gift of dark pink roses traditionally shows gratitude. With more than 30,000 varieties of roses existing today,There is no shortage of ways to express yourself with these beautiful flowers. Okay, everybody, let's talk about the rise of the rose through history. The rise here is not talking about growing a rose. When something rises, it goes from a lower position to a higher position. And when we talk about the popularity of something or the power of something, we talk about the rise of something, like the rise and fall of the Third Reich in World War II, the rise and fall of the Nazis. But this is the rise of the rose, how it started to become popular.At various times in history.
If you like to read newspapers and pay attention to the news, you'll often hear the phrase, we've had a rise in violence or a rise in crime. More people are committing criminal acts. And it's just like that, what Tom said. You get something to where it's becoming more and more that case. You see more and more of it. So the rose started out kind of, you know, like an ordinary flower, and it became more and more important over time. So we're going to talk about the history of the rose.
Kind of interesting that here the verb rise in the past tense is rose,
right.
R-O-S-E, rose, but that's different.
I think our author was trying to be clever.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't get that until we started to explain it, but in any case, yes, the rise of the rose, and the rose has risen, and we're going to talk about it in today's lesson. Now, of all the flowers in the world, there is perhaps none more iconic than the rose. Okay, so iconic here means it has to do with icons. If something's iconic, that means it's a symbol of something. When you see it, you know it represents something. You've got icons on your computer screen, of course, or on the screen of your smartphone. They tell you what the program is. So they're kind of little symbols that represent something. So yes, you've probably seen roses all over the place, and they represent something.
Right. Allusions to this flower are scattered throughout modern culture. Let's take a look at this word allusions, guys. Allusion. This word means that you're saying or doing something that brings something else to mind. When you don't refer to the rose directly, but maybe talk about, you know, the symbolism behind red flowers. That would be an allusion to red roses. Everyone knows red roses are the romantic flower to get a girlfriend, or maybe if you're really romantic, you can get red roses for your boyfriend. I once gave one red rose to a boyfriend because he'd done something nice to me, nice for me, actually. Anyway, an allusion to something, again, is just a reference to something. You don't mention it directly, but it brings that thing to mind. And we've got these references to the rose scattered throughout modern culture. However, it says this alluring bloom was just as significant in the past. If something's alluring, it's attractive to you, makes you kind of want to look at it more. We'll often talk about someone looking very alluring in maybe a formal gown, someone who's dressed up a lot, looks pretty hot. They can be very alluring. What's a bloom?
Bloom. Interesting. Bloom oftentimes is used as a verb. When do the flowers bloom, for example? But here, bloom is being used as a noun. It just means a flower, and it has long been used to communicate a number of ideas, ranging from romance to political alliances. Okay, so yes, it's been used to do these things. People have used it for various purposes. They want to communicate something. They don't want to say it directly. Maybe it will be more meaningful if they give someone a flower, for example. That will convey something more strongly. So, yes, you can communicate lots of ideas. And we've got a range of ideas here, ranging from. This is a verb phrase, to range from something to something else, or it's a phrase. And so it ranges from romance to political alliances. So, yes, at the beginning it can mean something romantic. It's something that symbolizes love of one person for another. Or it could also symbolize political alliances. And here, an alliance, that just refers to whose side you are on, whose team you are fighting for. So an alliance could also be a bunch of people getting together and forming some kind of team, for example. An alliance during World War II, for example, there was an alliance with England and the USA and Canada and China. They were all on the same side. They were an alliance.
Yeah, we often will use alliance in business, guys, to talk about competitors who actually join for some group project. They have a joint alliance. They're not going to share everything. They're just going to share information that has to do with a special maybe product they're coming up with together. But that is also used quite often, not just in politics, but in business. Now, in this way, the flower has served as a powerful symbol throughout time. That's true. Now, we often will talk about something serving as something else. It just is acting as that thing. It's in that position. So the flower has been used or has served as a political or powerful symbol throughout time. Let's move on to the next paragraph. We're going to go way, way back in time to Greek mythology. It's believed the rose first became important during the time when the Greeks had their heyday, when they had a lot of power. And if you look at that word mythology, you see the word myth. A myth is a story that was invented to explain some sort of thing. And in Greek and Roman history, they had a lot of myths to talk about why the sun rose in the sky or what was happening in nature. They didn't know about science yet, so they came up with these crazy stories about how there were gods and humans who were controlling the things that were happening on Earth, but also in heaven. So when you see mythology, it's those stories that explain things back in time.
And most cultures in the world have mythologies, Greek mythology, Roman, Norse. I'm sure lots of cultures in Africa or Australia all have mythologies as well. Lots of colorful stories there. I'd like to check them all out. But in Greek mythology, we've got Aphrodite. Okay, so when Aphrodite, the Greek goddess of love, emerged from the ocean, the sea foam that touched her body turned into bushes of white roses once it reached the shore, creating a symbol closely connected with her beauty. So again, in Greek mythology, we've got Aphrodite, and in Roman mythology, that would be Venus. Okay, so this is Aphrodite, and in Greek mythology, she is the goddess of love and maybe some other things. Lots of those gods and goddesses had different sorts of jobs, but this particular goddess was the goddess of love, and she emerged from the ocean. So here we've got the verb to emerge, which means to kind of come forth, to come into view when it was hidden before.
Yeah, we'll often talk about the sun emerging from behind some clouds. You couldn't really see the sun directly because there were too many clouds in the sky. But if it emerges, it's suddenly clear. Now, she would emerge from the ocean. Just picture this. The sea foam that touched her body would come with her, and that foam would turn into white roses once it got to the shore. Foam is those white bubbles that we often will see on top of, let's see, is it coffee? They have bubbles.
Latte, yep.
Latte, they have foam. Mm-hmm. Or a beer has foam on it.
Yep.
If you pour it out, it's got all those bubbles. That's foam. Well, if you've been to the ocean and you've seen the waves come in to shore, there's a lot of bubbles because the water's turning over so fast. So they're saying that sea foam that actually was coming with her as she was emerging or rising out of the ocean would actually turn into white roses. And of course, roses don't grow on trees. They grow in something we call a bush, a very small tree. That's how you can kind of describe a bush. But they don't get very big. You have to trim them a lot. But that bush is able to produce a lot of different flowers depending on what color that particular bush has. So that sea foam supposedly turned into white roses when she got to the shore, and that was creating a symbol closely connected with her beauty. Because as everyone knows, Aphrodite was quite, quite beautiful. And those poor men would fall in love with her, and they had no hope.
They had no hope, but the point here is that white roses symbolize beauty, or they symbolize Aphrodite's beauty. Okay, let's go on now to talk some more about roses in just a couple of seconds, but right now we're going to take a break, and we'll be back in a second. Okay, everybody, let's continue with our lesson. We're talking about roses, and we talked about some of the symbolism associated with roses. We just got done talking about the white rose. That's kind of a symbol of Aphrodite, the Greek goddess of love and fertility and other things. And let's move on now to the third paragraph here. It says, during this period, or during the period, during the time, during the era of the Roman Empire, roses began serving another purpose. So we were talking about the Greeks, and Greek civilization came before the Romans. And so now we're talking about the Roman Empire. Of course, an empire is some kind of political entity, a country, a kingdom, what have you, that is ruled by an emperor. So the Roman Empire, in the Roman Empire, roses began serving a purpose other than the purpose they served in the Greek Empire.
So that's the Roman Empire we just were talking about. It says roses were painted on the ceilings of banquet rooms as a way to remind guests that anything discussed while they were drunk should be kept secret, while they were under the influence. Under the influence of alcohol or drugs, it just means you're not able to make really good decisions because your judgment is a little bit off.Because you're either drunk or you're drugged up. Anyway, here, they had beautiful roses on the ceilings. And I guess if you're drinking a lot, you want to look up at the ceiling. It's supposed to remind you, don't talk about things that you shouldn't. Banquet. A banquet is a big, big dinner where a lot of food is served. Typically, a lot of times those banquets are buffet where you would go and be able to pick out the foods that you want. But sometimes you're served at banquets. Just know that if you're at a banquet, there's going to be a ton of food. And it's usually quite fancy. And it usually takes several hours to get through that meal. But a banquet room. We'll often have banquets after weddings here. Mm-hmm. That's very popular.
A wedding banquet, indeed. And there's probably going to be entertainment as well. So, yes, indeed, on the ceilings of banquet halls,They had roses painted there, and they reminded guests, hey, you know, if you're discussing something, it's got to be on the QT, as we say in English, which means hush, hush, you know, don't let anybody else know what you're talking about. And this gave rise to the Latin phrase sub rosa, meaning under the rose, which is used to denote confidentiality. To give rise to something means it causes something to happen or it makes something very likely to happen. So it basically brought about this phrase in Latin, sub rosa. And, you know, I've never used this in a conversation myself. I've read it before, but that's basically what it means, keep things secret.
Yeah, and oftentimes we'll use these Latin phrases quite frequently, especially in certain fields like law. If you're a lawyer, you probably know a lot of Latin phrases because that's kind of cool. But most of you have seen ETC, right? Et cetera. That's Latin. So our language, at least the English language, still has retained or kept a lot of the old Latin without changing it too much. So sub rosa, if you see it now, in the future you'll know it means you need to keep this confidential. So if something denotes something, it equals that or it means that. And confidentiality means you need to keep whatever someone told you secret. You are not permitted or allowed to talk about something that's top secret. And someone could say, you know, there's a contract we need you to sign before you start working with us. You have to agreeto keep everything that you work on confidential. It's a confidentiality agreement. A lot of companies will make you sign that if you work in high tech or even an industry where secrecy is very important.
That's right. So, yes, that denotes it means confidentiality. Hush, hush. Keep it a secret. Don't let anybody else know about this. It's between you and me.
So, back in the 15th century...Back in England, that's 1400s, there were two warring houses, the House of Lancaster and the House of York. Now, you know that England has a lot of royalty, right? Well, back then, the royalty were actually the ones fighting to maintain control over their land, their property, and they called them houses. So we've got the House of Lancaster, the House of York, and if you're warring, you're fighting. with each other. So there was a lot of this going on back in the medieval ages or the Middle Ages, medieval times. They were both represented by a single rose, a white one and a red one, respectively. I think we've explained respectively before. Don't use it if you're talking or speaking. Only use it if you're writing, because if you're speaking, people have a hard time keeping track of which noun you said first. So if you see this respectively, you'll note the order that the House of Lancaster comes in first, House of York is second. The red one comes in first, the white one second. So the red is attached to the House of Lancaster, and the white rose belongs to the House of York. So that's how that works, respectively. Again, don't use it in conversation.
I think that explanation will be sufficient there. I'm not going to add to that. I'll move on to the next sentence here. When the House of Lancaster, the ones with the red rose, when they won control of England, then Henry Tudor became King Henry the Seventh. Okay, so you've got King Henry the Seventh there. And after he married Elizabeth of York, he combined both roses to show the relationship between the two houses, creating the Tudor rose. Okay, so he kind of mixed them together, and I guess the House of York and the House of Lancaster were no longer fighting. They settled their differences by having a marriage there. So they became friends. They got together and had parties and stuff like that, and they symbolized their new relationship with a rose that I guess combines white and red together.
Mm-hmm. So in our final paragraph, it says today roses are largely used to express feelings for others. Sometimes it's difficult to find the right words and express them to someone that you care about. So if you want to kind of get around that, avoid having to come up with something to say that's just perfect, a lot of people will just go ahead and buy flowers and hope that those flowers kind of give that person a sense of how they're feeling. Flowers are so beautiful that you can kind of get away without saying all those words that you want, except for the red roses, which mean romantic love. Girls and guys are both going to want to hear I love you from their significant other. But it's true. Roses are largely used to express feelings for others. They're quite expensive. It's not cheap to buy. Even a dozen red roses can run you almost $100 US if you have, you know, some other flowers thrown in there too. But my advice is if you buy roses for someone, don't mix in any other flowers. They're beautiful on their own.
And, of course, roses are very expensive on Valentine's Day.
Oh, yeah.
Because they know the guys have to buy them. If they don't buy them, they're going to be in big trouble. It's certainly emotional blackmail there. But, hey, we don't got much of a choice there. You're going to have to fork out, boys, for those roses on Valentine's Day. But, again, they symbolize or represent love. Yellow roses are connected with friendship. Okay,
true.
So friends will exchange yellow roses. And a gift of dark pink roses traditionally shows gratitude, which means you're thankful to someone for something they've done. Oh, thank you very much for the favor you did me. So here is a dark pink rose to express my gratitude.
My advice is to just get online and take a look at what some of these colors represent to make sure you're not sending the wrong color. I honestly had never heard that dark pink represent gratitude. That's interesting.
It's a new one on me, too, yeah.
Yeah, I was just looking up the color, flower color. And for some reason, more than any other flower, roses or the color of the roses is important. So, for example, Tom was talking about tulips that are grown in his hometown. Tulips, yeah, whatever. I never think about the color. I just look and see if they look pretty and, you know, if they look like they're fully open or they're still a bud. But with roses, the color is absolutely important. So if you are feeling friendly towards somebody and you give them red roses, you could find yourself in a little bit of a sticky situation. Might be a little uncomfortable because, in essence, you're saying I love you to that person with those flowers.
Do your research first. So with more than 30,000 varieties of roses existing today, there is no shortage of ways to express yourself with these beautiful flowers. Varieties, of course, are kinds of flowers, lots of different kinds of flowers, but as we suggested, there's no shortage of ways to express yourself. There are lots of ways. You're never going to run out of ways to express yourself. So, yes, do some research first before you fork out your money to buy those roses for your friend, your lover, your parents, or your teacher, or whoever.
Just out of curiosity, I looked up what some of the other colors mean. So if you've got white, because I do see white roses being given out, it's the color of purity, chastity, and innocence. White flowers are generally associated with new beginnings. Maybe someone gets a new job or they're walking down the aisle. You have a friend who's getting married. That's a new beginning for sure. You've got, I haven't seen orange roses, but they signify passion and energy. I think you would just get those just as kind of a fun, different color. I wouldn't worry too much about the meaning. Lavender roses, they kind of mean love at first sight. So if you see someone and you don't get a chance to really talk very much, maybe you can send them lavender roses so they know you're really interested.
Yep, that's a good point there, that you're really interested. It's kind of a struggle for a guy like myself to, you know, discuss this topic and appear as though I'm interested. Most guys don't really care what roses mean. It's the girls who care, so the guys have to know these things. Otherwise, you're going to have an argument or something like that. So, yes, guys, you better listen to this stuff, and you better know what rose to give your girlfriend or wife or whoever on what occasion, or you're going to suffer dearly for it.
Actually, I prefer receiving plants. Potted plants are pretty wonderful.
Yeah, aloe vera, that's actually something more practical. Roses die. Who wants to give those?
Aloe vera is not a pretty-looking plant, though. But, yeah, I do enjoy plants. Getting back to colors, I wanted to mention that as a fun kind of gag gift for people who are turning 40, which is kind of a big deal for a lot of people, they feel like their youth is leaving them. They'll often receive black roses because it's funny. But they're kind of cool. You don't find them everywhere. You got to look around for them. But they do actually grow black roses, too. So we've got a lot of different varieties. I don't know. I don't see a lot of roses in my neighborhood. I have seen a lot of little white ones and I think purple ones.
But well, of course, we all know the little rhyme we used to say as kids.
What?
Roses are red, violets are blue, sugar is sweet, and so are you. But of course, we've changed that. The boys changed it, of course.
Yeah, totally.
It's how's it go? It goes, roses are wilted, violets are dead, sugar is lumpy, and so is your head.
Oh, I haven't heard that one. Roses are red, violets are blue.
Sugar is lumpy.
Something like you stink and so do, well, I don't know.
There are various varieties you can check that out.
There are lots of ways to change that, yeah.
A violet, of course, is a different kind of flower. But hey, I think that brings us to the end of our discussion about roses. And this would have been a good discussion a couple of weeks ago when it was Valentine's Day. Hopefully, guys, you got the roses to the girls and you didn't have a big argument because you didn't. Okay, that brings us to the end of our lesson for today. Thank you very much for joining us. And please join us again for another edition of our program next time. From all of us here at English Digest, I'm Tom.
I'm Stephanie.
Goodbye.
Bye.